From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for August 16th, 2019. Checking the calendar, you have your choice of fest this weekend. It's Irish Fest at the Lakefront, Lobster Fest at the Fiserv Forum, and Indian Fest at Humboldt Park. This Sunday at the Miller High Life Theater, it's Dionne Warwick. And finally, the Brewers are home this weekend with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Well, Oscar Mayer may have outdone the state fair with strange food items. How about an ice cream Oscar Mayer ice dog sandwich? It's hot dog flavored ice cream with spicy mustard between two cookies. I suppose it could be worse, but I'm not sure how. Now, if this doesn't scare porch pirates, I don't know what will. In South Carolina, porch pirates grabbed a box that contained 9 tarantula spiders. And you know what they say about karma. And in Germany, apparently there's a season for loud, boisterous noises. Germans are calling their 911 to complain about hedgehogs that are having unacceptably loud sex. Which begs the question, what's acceptable? In the studio today, we have Mark Amateas, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week and explaining the inverted yield curve, here's Kyle Tedding.
Yeah, thanks, Max. Stocks continued their volatility this week as investors continue to respond to further signs of slowing economic growth. Investor fears have caused the yield on longer-dated treasuries to plummet as investors pour money into safe haven assets like treasuries. For the first time since 2000, falling long-term yields caused an inversion in the yield curve as the rate on the 10-year treasury fell below the yield on 2-year treasuries on Wednesday. While the yield curve inversion is one of the most closely watched recession indicators, there are still positive signs of economic growth here in the U.S. With only a trickle of earnings news, investors traded on macro news this week, allowing the 3% decline on Wednesday, but also allowing stocks to melt higher later in the week. Overall, it was a bumpy week for stocks, with the NASDAQ down 0.8% to close today at 78.96, the S&P down 1% this week to close at 28.89, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.5% to close at 25.887, but up 308 points today, and the yield on the 10-year Treasury going from 1.73% at the start of the week to close at 1.54%. For the year, the NASDAQ up 19.7%, including dividends, the S&P up 16.6%, and the Dow Jones up 12.5% for the year. So despite a bumpy few weeks, still quite a bit to hang our hats on in terms of positive returns for stocks. Mark, no shortage of stuff to talk about this week.
Yeah, that's right, Kyle. And as Max alluded to, we really want to spend a lot of time on interest rates and the inverted yield curve. But before we do that, Joel, there's a lot of economic data out this week. One of the things that caught my eye was how strong retail sales were, real positive sign. We had the weakness in housing in one report, but strength in another housing report. So tell me a little bit about what those reports
said. Yeah, Mark. So, yeah, I mean, we talk all the time about how important consumers are to the U.S. economy. You know, 2/3 of our gross domestic product come from consumer spending. So those retail reports are really important. The retail sales for July went up higher than analysts were expecting. And it was a very strong across the board, widespread increase in sales led by online stores. And that was helped by the Amazon Prime Day last month. And also gasoline stations had good sales because their prices went up. But another key sign within that is that restaurant sales went up. So that's usually a sign that people are, feeling comfortable enough with where they are financially and their prospects that they're eating out. So that was a good sign. And we follow that up with today we had consumer sentiment numbers from the University of Michigan. And although they were the lowest since the beginning of the year, we're still at a level last seen two recessions ago. So, near the highs back before the 2001 recession. So it's a little, a little rougher for consumer sentiment. You know, it's something to watch, but we're still pretty high there.
And the housing, real good report on building permits, not such a good report on housing starts, right?
Yeah, and the housing numbers, all the housing data that we look at are all volatile from month to month. They bounce around a lot. But yeah, the important thing there is that the number of houses that are being built are still near where they were at the peak of since the last recession, which got, especially if you look at the single family houses, those are the ones that are most important, and that's about 73% of the houses being built. They're back up to the highest since January, which was the highest since the recession, but they're also still about half the level of the building that we saw before the last recession, when we really had that housing boom that actually got us into a lot of trouble. And those housing permits are a sign of housing yet to come. So people are taking permits out to say, hey, we want to build houses. So those are all still good signs, although, you know, there's a lot of belief out there that housing probably peaked maybe a year and a half ago.
Kyle, there's been a lot of talk, a lot in the press about interest rates. We'll spend a lot of time on that, and what's known as an inverted yield curve. Talk a little bit about exactly what that is, what causes it. You know, is it good or bad? Give us a good explanation of what an inverted yield curve is.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about yield curve inversion now for a couple of quarters, and in particular with you know, what happened this week with now the rate on the 10-year Treasury coming near where the rate on the 2-year Treasury is, and that's kind of the most typical measure as you look at those two benchmark Treasury rates to get an idea of inversion. But it's not new. It's certainly not a conversation we haven't had, but I think it's worth pointing out what's actually going on here, what some of the causes are. As you mentioned, is it a good thing or a bad thing? You know, maybe not a good thing, but maybe not as bad as most people are thinking. But, you know, maybe to jump in here, you know, you look at kind of what that inversion is, and it's very much a case of investors chasing yields on longer-term bonds, on those safe assets, and pushing the price of those bonds higher. And if you remember that there's an inverse relationship between price and yield, or the price and the interest rate on those bonds, it pushes the yield down. And so what you've got is all this money pouring into 10-year treasuries, less money pouring into 2-year treasuries, but money going there as well. And so the rate on the 10-year treasury has now been pushed in about in line with the 2-year treasury. I think it's important to note, you look at Wednesday this week, we didn't close inverted, so that the rate on the 10-year was actually a little bit higher than the rate on the 2-year. But certainly it's a conversation that we continue to have because we're pretty close there. And so, you know, I think just from an outset, investors need to understand that we're not quite there yet, but we're pretty close to being there in terms of inversion. And it very much is investors chasing safer money. And for a variety of reasons I think we can talk about, but investors chasing safer money of longer maturities.
So why is it looked upon as a negative or a red flag, if you will? It often, not always, but it often precedes a recession. Give us a taste of what is the market taking from that inverted yield curve?
Yeah, so we've had 9 cases of yield curve inversion since 1960. Only 7 recessions since 1960, though, and obviously before every one of those 7, you saw that inversion. That does leave those 2 other inversions that didn't immediately lead to a recession, though. And so, you know, maybe some room, some wiggle room there. But, you know, investors look at that inversion and they see it as a sign that a recession is imminent. And again, a lot of that gets back to what's going on that causes the inversion. It's investors chasing safer money, less willing to take risk. That can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You can have maybe less investment than what we need to keep the economy growing. And so, you know, by throwing money into those safer treasuries, you're actually maybe fulfilling the prophecy of that recession, hurting the potential for growth simply by taking that risk off the table. And so, you know, I think potentially a sign that a recession is coming, important to note, it's not a sign that it's coming next week, next month. On average, it's about 14 months ahead of the recession, but the range is pretty big. It's anywhere from 7 months to 19. So this isn't necessarily something that signals a recession. And even if it does, it doesn't mean that it's coming tomorrow.
And to add on what Kyle just said, if you look at since 1978, the average return of the S&P a year after the yield curve inverts is almost 13.5%. So when Kyle says it's not coming for 14 months, that's pretty much spot on since 1960, 1978.
Such a great point, Mike. You know, you look at the returns on the market versus the economy, and when we talk about recession, we're talking about the economy. We're not talking about stocks. Yes, the two do have a relationship long term. The economy grows, stocks tend to grow. But I think it's important to note that the markets tend to lead the economy. And so even if we did see a recession, if it's short, if it's shallow, we very well could see stocks recovering potentially, Joel, as you and I like to joke, long before we even know that we're in a recession.
Right. In fact, the definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Well, you don't know you've had it until you've had it. So by that time, you might be midway through or even potentially through a very mild recession. But Mike, you made a real great point. I think a lot of market watchers and economists watch what's called the 2-10 spread, the yield differential between the 2-year and the 10-year treasury. And when that inverts, it seems to be a better signal of trouble ahead. But the last time that 2-10 inverted was in December of 2005. Stocks didn't peak until almost 2 years after that. And then we didn't actually fall into a recession until a couple months after that. During the dot-com boom, the 2-10 first inverted in May of 98. But really, it was about 2 years later before we really ran into trouble. So, you know, when the yield curve inverts, the last thing it means is quick run out and sell all your stock. No, it's a caution. It's a red flag. One piece of information I found really interesting, as you had mentioned, Kyle, since 1950, okay, we've had 10 recessions, 7 of them preceded by an inverted yield curve. But all 10 were preceded by fiscal tightening. And we don't see that right now. In fact, the Fed is loosening. So fiscal tightening is even better harbinger, if you will, of recession, and we just don't have it. So again, it's a real good data point to watch. There's a lot of other things going on, I think, that can affect it. Negative interest rates all around the world, quantitative easing and lowering of the Fed funds rate here and abroad, things that aren't just market-driven. You know, it's policy driven. Be watchful, but don't panic.
Mark, I think you hit on the negative interest rates abroad as one of those key drivers. Again, getting back to the prices is inverse to the direction of yield. If you've got all these people maybe in Germany or in France or in Italy who are chasing U.S. bonds because they pay far more than what you can get in Europe, you're going to drive the yields on that 10-year down, and that's what we've seen. And so, you know, I think that's a key point as to why this time may be different. And the other piece to remember here is that, you know, we've never had the rest of the world pull us into recession. And that's kind of what we're looking at right now. The slowdown is very much coming outside the U.S. And when you look at the U.S., it's actually economically on pretty solid footing. You've got, you know, strong consumers, as we talked about with retail sales. But it's not just the sales piece. It's that they also have better balance sheets. They're also from a debt perspective in far better shape than they were prior to the financial crisis. And so while we haven't seen it before where the rest of the world's pulled the U.S. into a recession, it doesn't mean it can't happen. And like you said, maybe the inverting yield curve is just one signal to watch.
And Kyle, to that point, I mean, you're talking about the strength of the consumers. You know, the numbers that we look at every week are the jobless claims, new applications for unemployment insurance, and those have been below the 52-year average every week since the beginning of 2013. So it's 6.5 years straight. Then what that shows is how tight the labor market is, and that tends to encourage consumers to spend money. I had a hint that you were going to be talking about household debt. I looked this up, but at the first quarter of this year, 9.9% was the percent of disposable income that U.S. households had for debt service, and that's near a record low, and it's down from 13.2%, so 9.9% down from 13.2% before the last recession. So you know, there are all sorts of reasons to be confident in what's going on in the U.S. economy.
And even with us having a relatively strong economy versus the rest of the world, very low unemployment, again, we, you know, going back to some of the data points that came out this week, no real inflationary pressures. I mean, you look at capacity utilization. Joel, you can talk about that for a minute. And consumer price index, okay, that went up, but only to right around within range of what the Fed is looking for.
Right, that's right, Mark. And the capacity utilization is one of the measures that we have sort of to see what inflation is in the pipeline. And if we look at that, that's been below the average, the long-term average, every month since April of 2008. So we don't really see a lot of pressure. We don't see inflation, and we don't see a lot of pressure that will cause inflation.
And if we're talking about signals of recession, Mark, as you mentioned earlier, it tends to be Fed tightening that's really the best predictor. And so why would the Fed tighten? The Fed would tighten because they're seeing inflationary pressures. And in the absence of that, via, you know, consumer price index or personal consumption expenditures index, there's really no need for the Fed to get much tighter right now. And again, the data changes, obviously, and the Fed has been very clear that they're going to be dependent upon what happens with that data. But I think Fed tightening is far less of a concern right now than it would be at many other times when we're even talking about recession.
Well, I think they really learned their lesson in the fourth quarter of last year, right? And had to change their tune 180 degrees, and then the market took off. So I think you're absolutely right, Kyle. Kyle, we averted an earnings recession. Almost all the companies in the S&P 500 have reported now for the second quarter. So now we start looking ahead to third quarter. Quick recap on the second quarter, and what do you see for the third quarter as far as corporate earnings?
Yeah, you know, I think we continue to kind of muddle along here with earnings. You look at kind of the expectations for full year 2019. We had thought maybe upper single-digit growth, 6 to 8%, and when you go back to maybe last year's seminar, you know, that's kind of the way we were talking about the world. And then you had the fourth quarter in stocks kind of point to the fact that maybe we were overshooting our estimates a little bit, and lo and behold, you get the first quarter negative, the second quarter where now we think we're going to get about 2.5% growth in earnings, the third quarter potentially back to negative, and then finally at the end of the year, starting to see some reacceleration of that earnings growth. And that'll be a big thing for 2020. You know, as we talk about maybe 11% earnings growth, even if we back that off a little bit, you know, I think still well positioned from a forward earnings perspective, from kind of the way we're pricing the market right now, to you know, potentially have some room for stocks to run a little bit higher because we're going to see that growth again in earnings.
Just to kind of finish up on interest rates, the 30-year Treasury is sitting, you know, just over 2%. Hit an intraday record low, all-time record low on Wednesday. The 10-year's down about 1.6. I think a lot of people have seen some really good returns this year in their bonds. They have to understand that a big chunk of that is price appreciation. It's not yield. And when interest rate yields stop falling, that piece of the improvement is going to be gone. That part of the profit in bonds is going to be gone, and now you're going to be down at a low yield environment. So maybe just a couple words, Mike, on what are you telling clients these days about their portfolio structure and how they should kind of handle things as far as asset allocation, keeping those types of things in mind?
So for the asset allocation piece, I know in the fixed income portion of the portfolios, we've been kind of lengthening durations a little bit, going to more intermediate bonds, staying with the higher quality. Like we've been talking about for months, it's starting to catch up with everyone now. But the two things I've been talking to clients a lot about is, first thing, and I talked to Kyle about this today, is I've gotten a few calls this week. I tell them to turn off the financial networks. Because with everything that's happened, they get the big flashy red headlines, and I try and tell them, hey, it's kind of the reminder whenever this happens that first and foremost, those are TV shows, and what do TV shows need? They need ratings, so they try and scare you and tease you with, we'll tell you what, right after the break. And just to pay attention to the things we talk about in conversation, the fundamentals of the economy, the things that we've all been discussing so far here on this podcast. And then when it comes to allocation, the staying balanced is the key, not to get too far extended in equities. I know sometimes when you see a big 800-point drop or you see a week like this, some people, now's the time to go all in on equities because we had a bit of a drop. Well, that drop, as you can see, 800 points on Wednesday, what do we finish? We're only down 1.5% on the Dow this week, which really isn't that much. So I tell them, you kind of have to rein some people in a little bit, but just the importance of staying balanced along U.S. and international, even though sometimes the international piece can be a little scary with some of the headlines you're seeing. It's important just to stay balanced and not reach too far out for yield or try and overextend yourself in equities.
Concentrate on the fundamentals. Good advice. Well, thank you for listening, folks. We love doing the show. Tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.